Good day, ladies and gents. Welcome to the Fairway Fit Golf Podcast, where two friends get together to talk about how we are trying to look good, feel good, and play good. Let's go.
All right. Welcome back, Fairway Fit fans, for another bonus episode. I've got Brad here, and we got going solo tonight. Greg is busy doing a couple things, but we have a special episode. As we said, we are sitting here. We have watched the snow come down all day. We are going through our OCG disorder, where we're obsessive compulsive disorder about golf. It is having a lot of drain on us of all the snow on the ground. I was able to get my run in on the golf course today, but it was so much snow in there. I just can't wait to be out. But I wanted to bring on a special guest. And for everybody who knows, I am bringing on my big brother, Brian. Brian, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm not loving this snow either, but I was able to break away earlier last week to get a few rounds in Florida. So, but now it started snowing again. I'm not sure where we're going to get out there, but it's great to be on. Really excited about this.
Yeah, so as people have been following along with us, we have talked quite a bit about you, and you have come up a lot in our conversation. Greg and I have played golf with you a handful of times. We talk about a lot of the trips that you have done, and you know what, both of us have kind of come kind of full circle, and we're back, and golf is a pretty much a big part of our lives right now. And one thing, you know, what I want you to do is it kind of give yourself a little bit of a background of how your path of golf brought you to where you are now. And of course, I want you to talk about bullpens and bunkers, because that's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah. So I have to say, I don't think I ever envisioned my life having such a big golf influence like it did, but it's been awesome. And I think it's equally cool to watch you guys kind of put together a podcast. And after moving back from England and getting back into the groove of things in America here, hearing you guys talk about local golf, it just kind of excites me even more to get back in the swing of it. And to be able to do this is also equally cool to kind of tell. Part of the big thing I like about golf now is really the storytelling aspect of it. And so I won't nerd out too much on the history and architecture just yet, unless you guys want me to. But that's kind of that's become my new sort of passion too. So, but I mean, you probably know me best. I mean, we came from a massive sports family, right? Like we were diehards when it came to anything that involved sports. You know, we were talking about kids going to college now. You know, I got a daughter going to college pretty soon here. And everyone's talking about schools. And I'm thinking to myself, when I was thinking about schools, I was only thinking about what baseball team am I going to play for. That was our life, right? It was playing sports. Yeah, it had nothing to do with what our GPAs were and nothing to do with what was going on. It was what school are we going to go play baseball at? So I think that's a pretty, it's one of those things where you look back and you think to yourself, people look at parents, they look at them like pushing them too hard to school. I think you and I were probably the two people that we couldn't get our parents to drive us enough to sporting events. We loved it so much. And so, you know, fast forward, we both have a great time playing college baseball. You obviously did really, really well in baseball. I sort of became like this guy who was in the bullpen, and hence the bullpens and bunkers is where that really comes from. But I spent a lot of time there. And it wasn't a negative thing, right? It was something where I found my niche on that team, and it just became part of me. And I just love the sports environment. So, you know, after baseball, for me, I didn't get to play baseball beyond college. I pretty much stopped, played a little bit of softball, kind of got injured in that a couple of times. Didn't really play too much at all, but I really became like a sports fanatic, right? So then I started becoming obsessed with DC sports, right? Whether we all grew up with the Redskins and they were awesome at the time. You know, and so we got to experience that, especially living where we live so close to all the Redskin players. And so that was exciting. But then, you know, there was something missing for me, especially. So, and you know me, I lived in my family and I, we've lived overseas or away from this area for probably 15 years. And so one of the things that I found myself doing was just chasing big events, right? So, you know, I did get to go to the World Series for the Nats. So did you. Yep. I went to the Stanley Cup. I went to NFL playoffs. I went to the NBA playoffs. I went to the Masters, the US Open, the Open, the Olympics, the World Cup. You know, I didn't get to go to the Sugar Bowl with you and Dad. That was one of my regrets of not going there. But I found myself just always looking for something, chasing down something that was trying to like satisfy or fulfill this sort of this the sports person in me. And so I really got into it. And I think when I lived overseas, I saw different cultures. And I saw something that really was special in the sense that sports was a similarity no matter where you were in the world. Like everyone just sort of rallied behind it. Not even in like the concept of the Olympics, but just it didn't like whether it was soccer, whether it was rugby, whether it was cricket. I mean, you just saw that all around the world. Sports sort of brought people together. And so that was kind of my whole, but nowhere in there did I play a lot of golf. I mean, you know my golf, which was every once in a while, let's see how many drinks we could have on a golf course and then go chase down the geese at Goose Creek and hopefully not fall out of the cart. And that was pretty much what we did when we went out there, and very few tournaments. Now, you were competitive and loved to not just play golf, but play really well at golf. And I never found that edge in golf. It just didn't really, I never got to that point. I didn't mind playing in tournaments. I thought they were fun, usually because I was just hoping to win something at the end based on the raffle, because it wasn't going to be based on my score. That's for sure. So I played infrequently. I remember in college, we'd have baseball, our baseball team would play golf. The coach would say, all right, we're all going to go. This is going to be our workout. This is going to be like a team bonding thing. I would play with my team there every once in a while, but that was about it. And so, you know, when my one daughter turned about 11 or so, she said to me, and I think she realized she wasn't going to be a team sports kid. And she said, hey, I want to play golf. And I was like, really? That's fascinating. Okay. So, we were lucky enough to live near a golf course. We joined the golf course, and all of a sudden she started playing every day, which obviously I had to play with her. And then, before you knew it, I was playing constantly. And so I think just before COVID, like 2018 or 19, we were definitely getting some serious rounds in. And I think that's where my real love for golf started to show up. So, but it wasn't really until, I got out there to England where I really saw where the opportunity presented itself to really dive into something a little bit deeper when it came to golf. So
let's get into the traveling a little bit in a few seconds though. But for those who don't know, Brian and I, obviously Brian's my older brother, but we have this kind of a special bond because when Brian turned 3, he was probably given the greatest gift he could ever be given on somebody's birthday in their whole entire lives. And, you know, although we are not twins, we do share the same birthday. So we do have this kind of special bond out there. And I have to say that bond has made our lives probably one giant competition at times. And so we're a little bit different. For those who have followed along, as Greg and I have talked many times about meeting up with you and different things. And we do always kind of joke that, you know, we have different roles in this podcast. Greg is kind of more of that fitness guy. I'm more of the golfer that uses fitness. He uses kind of the other way around it. And we always kind of talked about Brian as being kind of that golf nerd that was out there. And it really was no different growing up. I mean, I'll be honest with you. He didn't have to work as hard for his GPA as I may have. But yeah, so Brian has become a little bit more of this golf guru. And yeah, really, the big kick, I guess, is what you're about to get into is how you were able to travel a little bit when you were living overseas. And obviously, we're not going to get into all of that much detail about it, but tell us a little bit more before we get into those courses and that traveling that you did. You were able to create this thing kind of a little bit before Fairway Fit got started, and it was called Bullpens and Bunkers. And it kind of talks about some of your dreams that you have of maybe using golf and obviously those big giant sporting events that you were talking about, but get into a little bit of nitty gritty on what Bullpens and Bunkers is.
Yeah. So, I'll get to the, definitely when the whole process of getting to England and the people I met, I'll get to that in a second, but during that process, it's funny, the people I ended up meeting, it took 3,000 miles from Virginia to meet a couple of guys actually that were from Virginia and actually went to a rival high school of ours and our own high school. And I started playing with those guys. And so one of them kind of knew who we were just by, he was a little younger than both of us. And the other one was, I mean, when you talk about a golf nerd, he truly was. And he's got quite a big following online and he's really into golf history. And so I met this guy. And so we joked because my golf wasn't very good over there when I got started. And the golf courses that we started playing at had had these giant bunkers everywhere we were playing. And so before you knew it, I was in every bunker of every amazing course. And it got to a point where they were taking photos of me and videos of me hitting out of these bunkers all the time. And I said, man, I seem to spend my life in bullpens and bunkers. And like that's what it is, right? And so that just sort of got catchy. And then another guy moved into the area and he started saying it. And, you know, before you knew it, I was just sort of like this phrase or this thing we would joke about in terms of, you know, maybe if I could just build something around bullpens and bunkers. And yeah, you talk about it for enough times, it starts to become a reality. And then before you know it, like a year before I left, I decided to kind of look at what does that really look like? I got to a point where, and I felt like I had something to share, not just from a storytelling side, but also I felt like Americans were missing out on some of the things about golf that are you just don't understand unless you've experienced it. You have to immerse yourself in it. So I got that opportunity. So now I want to be able to describe that to people and then get them excited. And then I'll talk about this later, but I linked up with a company over in England who does tours and we've kind of partnered together to figure out ways to actually make trips happen for people to go back over to the UK or Ireland. So that's kind of where the Bullfins and Bunkers sort of name came. I'll be honest with you, when I describe it to people in England, they don't understand the bullpens part at all. They usually spell it wrong and it becomes a mess. So it's one of those where it's only catchy. It only means something really probably to me. And I think probably very few would even understand it. But you knowing me, spending a lot of time with bullpens, and then in England, I spend a lot of time with bunkers. That's just the way the name kind of came to be. So
what's funny is when, now that we're, Greg and I have been able to do the Fairway Fit together, people have heard about, listened to our episodes and you keep coming up. And obviously a lot of people knew that you were traveling for a very extended amount of time, but now that you're back, they're like, oh, you're back. But what's it going? I was like, oh, well, you know, my brother's up to this thing. He's got this thing called Bullpens and Bunkers. And I'm like, oh, well, what is that all about? I was like, well, I'll be honest with you. You know, I got to play a lot in college and my brother got to be in the bullpen a lot in college. And you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, really? I was like, haha. I was like, no, you don't understand. I go, he was there so much. He actually tried to talk his coach into naming the bullpen after himself. And,
yeah,
then they're like, yeah, that sounds exactly like Brian. And that's like something Brian would do. So so I always have to fill in people with that the bullpen part, where that came from. And obviously we've evolved and more to that bunkers part as golf has taken up on us. But last, you know, quite a few years, I know you've been over there for, and I know, like you said, pretty much over 10, 11 of the last 15 years, you have been over there in Europe and traveling with your job and everything. But one thing I want you to get into a little bit for us, and one thing that I always have talked about, is one of the golf trips that me, you, and Dad had the opportunity to go on. We've had the luxury of doing it twice. About 15 years ago, Dad came up with this genius idea, and I was playing some of the best golf of my younger career, and then before family and everything started, my single life. And I was so psyched to go over there, and we were able to do the St. Andrews Carnoustie trip. All right. And then it's about a year and a half ago, we were able to do this for the second time. And I know people talk about this is a bucket list item, but we were able to fill that bucket twice going on that trip. And I know that is just one of the many trips for you. So, you know, we're going to have you on quite a bit over the next season two, once we get up and going here for the 2025 season. But talk to us a little bit about some of those favorite courses that you had that opportunity to play over there. Maybe not just course, but maybe favorite trip that you were able to put together.
Yeah, it's a great question, because every time someone asks me like what my favorite course is, I do the cliche phrase of it, the next one. I mean, when I lived over there, it seemed like every time I played one, I couldn't wait to tell somebody about how awesome it was, right? And so, and you don't just walk up to a course in England or in Scotland or Wales or Ireland and just, you know, expect it to be incredible. But so I did a little bit of homework on those courses before I'd go there. I'd read about them. I'd understand what they are. And so, but really, honestly, the next course always became my favorite course. And so I still say that, but it's, but yeah, so when I got really lucky. So I met a few guys that literally took me under their wing. They had already done the St. Andrews trip a couple of times during COVID time. So they got really fortunate to get up there, you know, pretty much open tee times, and really took advantage of it. And One of the guys, like I was saying, is a golf historian guy. His Twitter handle is Shanking Shots, and he's got a pretty big golf history. He's a part of a golf history society, and so he was talking about just playing some really good courses. So right off the bat, like within 2 months of moving there, don't know these guys very well. We're walking on Sunningdale, and Sunningdale is probably one of the most raved courses in the world. It's top, you know, it's top 20 in the world every single year. It's held so many impressive events over the history. And I didn't know any of those things going there. But when we got there, it was an experience I've never had before. And it's a course that's not easy to get on, but they do. I mean, every course in England and Scotland is public, right? There's no real private courses. You just have to work the tee times to get out there. But if you remember last year, is where the Curtis Cup was, which is, and okay. I know LPGA has gotten pretty big for you and I. We both had daughters play golf. And it's also just fun to watch. But from the amateur side, they had the Curtis Cup there. And it was really awesome to watch them play that course, knowing when you've played it as well, right? Exactly. It's always really way more fun to do that. But that was the first course we played. And I can't even describe how beautiful it is. It's a Heathland course. And so that flavor of course, people ask me what I like. Links my favorite. Links is my favorite to play, but I say my heart belongs to the Heathland. I remember the holes. There's something about walking on this terrain that is just different than walking on a links course. And there's these colors of purples from the heather that's there that really just makes the walk really special. So that was the first course we played.
Let's get into what I know. Everyone kind of knows links style and more of your traditional American course, but tell us a little bit, what is the Heathland type style?
So the Heathland, you're going to have, If you picture like the Pinehurst, where you've got a lot of sand and sort of wiry grass and
waste
things
areas,
like that.
Yeah.
Waste areas. So imagine it being nothing but this heather, which is a really low growing shrub that is, at certain times of year, it turns a bright purple. And it's hard to hit out of. And in some places, they don't even want you to hit out. They'd rather you just drop. But it's almost like as if it's as wide as the fairways, right? And sometimes you have to hit over it 200 yards just to get onto the fairway. And so it's a really difficult hazard to play around and with, but it also shapes courses in a way. And so the cool thing about these Heathland courses is you use the terrain the way it is, and these mounds and these and you carve bunkers out of the hills, right? So you don't have the sand traps like you do in dunes, where you've got these sheep that are trying to like nestle against the wall and they make the sand traps. That's not what these are. They're actually carved out. And you've got this really pretty sand traps on these rolling hills. It's just beautiful to see that. But it's this purple color that I really like. But it's called the Surrey Sand Belt. There's probably about 30 or 40 of those courses in that area. You can imagine it kind of being like the sand belt down in North Carolina and South Carolina. Okay. It's very similar, but this is all just outside of London, right? So you won't even realize you're like 30 minutes outside of London and you're in this like just golf mecca of an area. So, shortly after that, we played Swinley Forest, which is, again, another top 50 course in the world. Harry Colt designed. It's just another really beautiful course. It's like a secret type of course. No one really knows about it. You don't really talk about it. So we were fortunate enough to get a tee time there. But it wasn't until we went to Royal Liverpool up in Hoylake, which is where the Open was in the 151. So the 151st Open was at Hoylake. And, again, didn't really know the history piece too much to golf just yet. We have these really long car rides, me and these guys that I was playing with. And, Shanking Shots was telling me all about, the history there and, Bobby Jones and John Ball and Harold Hilton, all these really famous players. We all know Tiger Woods and Rory won there as well. But it's one of those where when you got there, so it rained the entire day. We called the course. We said, hey, are we going to play today? Like, it is raining like the worst I've ever seen. And they said, in their best British accent, if we turned it off, if we shut down because of rain, we'd never play. Right. And so we took that as, of course, they're open. And we ended up being like the only people that played that day. But we played some in some horrible weather. I think they felt so bad for us that they gave us a really nice tour of the clubhouse. And so we got to see, Tiger's two iron, Rory's putter, all the Bobby Jones memorabilia. I mean, it was just one of those things. And then you play the course, and of course you remember the Bobby Jones shot. You could just picture everything, and you're like, wow, this is what it's all about. So that kind of got us hooked, right? That got me hooked. They were already hooked. I was hooked. And then all of a sudden, we just started taking trips nonstop. We went to Wales. We played Royal Porthclaw and Bernard. Royal Porthclaw is where the Senior Open was, I think, last year. Okay. And it's a beautiful course. So that's one of my favorite. Wales is a kind of like this secret gem of courses, super cheap, and just really you can't describe the terrain. It's just, Bernard is one of these places like you've probably never heard of it. And it's just like this most amazing types of terrain and undulations and crazy contours on these grains. And so, but we'd go out there for one night and play as much golf as we could. And then one day we actually got really crazy. We flew to Northern Ireland to play. We flew up, played Royal Porthrush, and the next morning we flew back. I mean, we got to a point where we were a little bit obsessive and crazy. Mm-hmm. I think my wife was going to kill me at one point, but it was so fun. It was one of those things. But when you think about areas, like you've got to break down Scotland into areas. You can't break it into, like my favorite area is probably East Lothian, which is about 20 courses within 20 miles, and it's east of Edinburgh. And if you remember, we played Craigielaw.
Yep.
On our last trip. And that was on the edge, probably. It's right next to Kilspendi, which is one of my favorite courses. But that whole area with Muirfield, North Berwick, Archerfield, Dunbar, all of those courses, and Gullin, it's just an amazing area to play. And so, but I'd have to say my second favorite course in the world is probably North Berwick there. It is just one of these down and back links courses. That's just like St. Andrews in the way that's, you know, out from the city and back into the city. But all the different types of course features have been designed based off a lot of those courses, whether that's the Himalayas or whether that's the Redan or all of these sort of things, like a lot of blind shots. And the thing that it really resonates for me is, if I can remember every hole in my head, after playing it once, that had a real impact on me, right? And so that's how I kind of measure my favorite courses. And I can picture myself, I played it a couple times, but I can picture myself on every hole, every tee box, and I played in the pouring down rain once and in the sun the next time. And so I can remember those. So that's one that I can really, really stands out to me.
Yeah, I've had the experience, obviously, the joining those two times, and you've always tried to get me over there, but you know, life gets in the way of everything. But it does sound like, and we've had many talks and discussions about, you know, where golf is in our lives. And we definitely have two different points of views of what golf is all about. Not that we both don't enjoy both sides. I mean, I could definitely tell, I know you're the competitive, and now that you're back and we're playing more together, you are caring a little bit more about not just the courses that we're playing, but obviously the rounds, the scores that you are putting up. And I kind of look at it a little bit more. I do try to work on my golf game and my ability to play golf well, and then playing golf well on nice courses is just a luxury for me. And the luxury, I think, for you is more or less you want to play the nicer courses and you're not as stressed out or get worked up about your shots, kind of like I do.
Yeah.
That's kind of how, you know, if we go back to it, that we could have said that was kind of similar in our lives in baseball as well, too. And luckily, I was able to work things out a little bit better at times. It played a little bit longer than you did in your career. But yeah, tell us a little bit, and I didn't mean to cut you off there, but tell us a little bit. You brought up the weather, and I have to bring this up because you always talk about the conditions that you play with. Now, I've been over there twice, and I think in the two times I've been over there, we've had two rainstorms in about the, I don't know, 14 or 15 days that we spent over there. And you're going to say how I brought that weather from the States over for you, but talk about some of those rounds that you were able to put and the rain gear maybe just wasn't enough for you.
Yeah. No, you guys were about as lucky as it gets. In fact, I actually get upset when when people do come over and play and it's just perfect weather. Cause that's just not fair. I mean, we did to play in the wind and the rain, and to have to change out of your rain gear at least once in a round. It should be the norm. And you guys were really lucky. I can remember it didn't rain the entire time until we were on hole 16 at Castle. And it just came down pouring rain. And you know, that's on the cliff side too. So you're about to take that big 17, yep, that par 3, 220, a really nice view. And but it rained so hard that I think Dad just quit that hole. They started walking in like he was just done.
Huh.
And
well, it came in so fast. I don't think he had time to even get his rain gear on. And by the time he got it on, it was over.
And it was over.
It was one of those, you put it on, are you going to do is keep sweating, sweating because your stuff was already wet anyway.
Yeah. So, you know, I remember because we got up on 17 and I was, you know, this was probably the, I mean, Castle's kind of a crazy course anyway,
yes,
but 17th is probably the one, you know, picturesque hole that I can remember mostly. And I hit the green and it was a long hole and I told you to videotape it. I think you were so worried about your rain gear and you forgot to videotape and you just took a picture and I was like,
yeah,
I've done it. So, but it was, but that was the one experience you have. But so for, I can remember I went to the Open at Royal Liverpool and to watch it. And I mean, if you remember that watching it on TV, we were taking pictures from the stands of all the umbrellas. Like there was, the whole place was just full of umbrellas. Especially, and they were all yellow because everyone was selling them at the gift shop there and everyone had the open umbrella. And it was wet, pouring down rain the entire day that day. And the next day, I'll never forget it, we played Hillside and Formby. And those two courses are two of the best courses in Ayrshire. It was, we were really excited. You know, it was July, so they were a bit expensive at that time. And my buddy, Shaking Shots, and I, we both played 36 holes, nonstop rain. And it was misery, but the courses were so beautiful that we didn't care. And he took a video of me walking, and all you hear is the rain just coming down in sheets and the clicking of the clubs. And at that point, rain gear had finally just not stopped working, and it's just it was what it is. What it is. I think the thing that people, the rain is one thing, but the wind is another. So when it's blowing on links courses, it can just be seriously like a 4-club difference some days. And I think the most I ever changed out of my rain gear in one round was 5 times, like literally 5 times in and out, because like you said, it gets hot when you stay in your rain gear. So it's just one of those things where you never went without it. And you kind of got used to it. And you usually brought 2 pairs of rain gloves when you went on these trips. And you always had one on the heater every night and you wore the next one the next day.
Now, I don't have too much to relate to over here in the States. Obviously, I've been hit with plenty of rain. And, you know, one thing here is you always got kind of tree cover. You can go find something, wait it out a little bit. And then if it gets really bad, you just kind of take that rain check and head on home, come back another day. But do you remember when we got there the first time and the trip we went out there? I want to say we went out on the Jubilee course.
Yes.
And we got, you know, we were like, oh, the storm's coming. If you remember, I think they were calling for like a blizzard type storm as well, too.
I remember.
And we got out there and we were probably about 7, 8, 9 holes in and we saw it coming. And I think Dad turned around and went straight back to the clubhouse and we looked at each other and said, listen, we're only going to do this one time. We might as well go ahead and finish. And I think we finished with 5 iron in hand and golf clubs in our back for the last like 5 holes and didn't even take our clubs off. And just kind of putted it up the fairway as best we could there.
The way I'd tell the story is it's the only course that I ever played where the flag was touching the green.
Yeah.
Because of the wind.
What's so funny. Now we try to film and take a lot of pictures of our rounds now, but we had phones then obviously, but never once kind of thought about pulling pictures out. I think we did get a picture, maybe two, but not like we would have today if we were over there in those conditions. So
it was crazy. I'll never forget that. It did. Or I got punished the last time I played Jubilee with my daughter, and we were out there, and it was buckets of rain again. And it's funny because she's a golfer, you know, and she doesn't mind being out there, although she doesn't like playing in the rain. But she did say, she goes, that was actually a really fun experience. So again, even someone that. But I'm trying to bring these American friends over, right? You know, I was talking to a buddy of mine who lives up in Maryland, and I used to say, you know, you got to get really, I was like, you know, it may rain, and you just get some rain gear. He goes, if I need rain gear, then I'm not playing golf. And I was like, oh, no, you can't think that way. Like, you've got to be really open to it and just embrace it. It's just going to happen. And I'm telling you, that'll be probably a more memorable round than it would be in the perfect sunshine, right? So take it for what it is.
Yeah. Now building from all your experience of traveling, bullpens and bunkers is kind of offering that opportunity, right? So talk to us a little bit about who you were able to pair up with and tell us a little bit about what you're doing as far as taking your experiences and trying to share it to others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was another guy that I played a lot with he's a PGA teaching pro in the States. He actually works at one of our local courses, but he's still living overseas at the moment. But you know, he's like the one of the most friendly people, and he can just walk into any clubhouse and he just makes friends. And he wants to, you know, as a PGA professional, you tend to just introduce yourself. You've got a card, you know, you can sometimes that offer, you know, sometimes that gives you benefits, but all what it really does is it creates a conversation, and he ends up being able to talk to the other pros, or you get just treated differently. And not because he's better, but just because it's different. And so there was one club, really nice club, great course. And he just struck up a conversation, and he said to me, he goes, "Brian, you really need to meet this guy. He's one of these guys that just, he's kind of, a golf nerd like you about just like golf travel and like really, but he's got his own little golf business on the side and travel business." And so after the round, I went into the clubhouse and I started chatting with him, and we struck up a conversation, and he said, "Hey, why don't we play again?" So, you know, a couple weeks later, I went down there and I played again at his place. And we had dinner together, and we were chatting, and he said, and he brought his colleague with him. He goes, "Yeah, this is our business. It's called Accentra. Yeah, it's Xentra. And it's smushed together for experience, entertainment, and travel." And so you shove that together, and it's Accentra Golf. And so like what it is it basically is they just do customized, really tailored trips that are designed to create an experience more so than just getting you transactionally on a golf course, right? Like they really want to bring in something that's a little bit special and different. And so that I was really drawn to that. And so as I was talking to them, you know, kind of like, you know, and they started asking me questions and where have you played? And I described where I was playing, and they're like, "Man, we've lived in England our whole life." And he's a PGA professional as well. And he said, "And you've played more courses than I have. And I've lived here my whole life. How do you know all these places?" And that's when it kind of dawned on him. He's like, "Well, what are you going to do when you go back to the States?" And I said, "Well, I'd love to just be able to bring groups over here and kind of show them all these experiences that I had." And he says, I think if we work together, I can help you with this." And so, you know, we just, you know, kind of created that friendship, and that turned into a partnership. And then, we actually just booked our first 2025 trip. That's going to be to Southwest Ireland. And we're going to do the whole Ballybunion, Waterville, Duke's Run, and then a little bit up at Port Marnock as well. So outside of Dublin. So like we've started this sort of venture together, and I'm kind of just a bit of a sort of an American person that can look at for American clients, because nobody that lives over there, you know, needs help doing trips over there. He needs people to come over there. And so I think that's sort of the model there, but they're such great guys. But what he asked me was, he goes, "Brian, what course can't you get on? Like, what have you just struggled with?" And I said, that you really want to get on. I said, I cannot get on a rye. And so, you probably haven't heard of rye, but it's one of those top 50 courses in the world, but it's in one of the most southern parts of England. And we reached out to him a couple of times, but you've got to really know somebody to get on there. It's kind of like and it's one of those, you go play and then you have a coat and tie sort of lunch type of place, like a mirror filled environment. Yeah. But it's much more laid back. It's not as prestigious as Mirrorfield, but it does have some prestigious events down there, like the President's Putter, which was just played. It's always played in January. Bernard Darwin, who's probably the most famous golf writer of all time, was a member down there. He actually won the putter one year. So like there were some really, it just had a lot of historical value. And it was a course I just really wanted to get on for some reason. But the kicker was it was alternate shot. So it's a foursomes. And so he had to go with a member. And then I had to find somebody, and I ended up like convincing the guy who was also the PGA pro that I was playing with to go with me. And I tell you what, I've never been so nervous because I'm not a good golfer. I'll be honest with you. You know, I think as a PGA pro, he was for my buddy, you know, you're more of a teaching pro, so you don't get to play a lot. Right. So you just never know which version of him is going to show up that day. And I tell you what, it came down to the 18th hole, and I hit a 3-wood that went all the way to the green. Into the wind, into the rain. I started raining on the 18th hole, and they duffed theirs, and we won. And so it was like there was just a special, cool experience. Then we had dinner together. I ended up giving him your first fairway fit shirts that you had ever had. I gave to those two guys that we played against, actually. So you have gone international.
There we go. I like to hear that. And,
Yeah. So, but it was a lot of fun. But that's how I kind of got linked up with them. There's another guy that is part of it. He's really the brains behind it. He's, you know, builds out the whole infrastructure piece to it. But yeah, it's a great couple of guys to work with. And I think together, we just want to pull together trips for people. And I've got about six that we have put together right now for 2026 across, mostly across Scotland and England. And we're trying to do some really new things where we might try to get a group of people here that will go over there and play a group of guys. And those group of guys would then come over back to the States.
Yeah.
And we would play, you know, our local clubs and then maybe go down to Pinehurst or Tobacco Road or something like that. And so try to make it different, like a kind of a competition, between, like a Ryder Cup type of thing between clubs. So
I have a lot of ideas. Not just as your brother, but I'd have to vouch. Like, I think what's unique and what drives me towards this is it is not just about the golf, and that, and it's that experience that that we're sharing, obviously, the fellowship with other people and everything. And I do think since obviously we've come back together, obviously you've come back to us here in the States, that you've brought that experience back to golf. You could tell from my enthusiasm in it as well too has grown to where I want to try to build those experiences. But I think it's my experience of trying to how to not only use fitness, like Greg and I like to talk about, how to bring in the lessons, the reps, the playing, has kind of rubbed off on you as well too. So we're trying to become like that whole package. So maybe something in the works there. But yeah, one thing we're going to try to do this season is that obviously we're going to try to have Brian back on. We might have some different episodes and different things we have in the works that are going to bring up. And we want to talk a lot about those experiences and those trips, not necessarily the trips that you offer, because we're not in here just to sell, but we're in here to talk about it and let you hear from firsthand about going over there. Because it's not about going in there and staying in the hotels that you see on TV. It's about going in there and staying upstairs above the pubs of the Dunvegan and different things like that, getting that experience, because that's the once in a lifetime type experience. I mean, obviously we can go book a hotel and pay what we have to pay, but we're looking for that type of experience. So one thing we like to do, and one thing that Bullpens and Bunkers has also been doing, is that you've kind of becoming a little bit of a golf journalist at the same time. And tell us a little bit about that. I know you've had a couple of things published now in different sort of magazines, maybe not magazines here as much as some stuff that's going on in Europe, but tell us a little bit about that and how that's come about, on how you've become this quote unquote journalist all of a sudden.
It's a bit of a stretch to call me anything other than just someone who likes to write about these experiences, and then someone who's had the willingness to put it on their website. I'd say that's about as far as it's gotten, but it's been fun doing it, right? In the sense that I think capturing it is, so there's some really good authors out there right now that that again, my buddy Shanking Shots kind of introduced me to, and I've kind of really, like, from there taken it to a different level of reading. Like, I read so much now, and I never read before, and I find that there's some really great magazines out there that that I would really like to write for someday. But it's just kind of describing, like, the adventures that I've gone on, or, like, you know, sort of the takes that I experienced, and then putting it into words, and also just keep reading and keep writing. Maybe somebody will like it. And so, but yeah, so I got really lucky. I was at my home club, which is Cleve Hill, which is an old Tom Morris course. You want to talk about a fun course. It's a Lynx course in the sky, as they call it. And it's up in the Cotswolds, and not too far from where we all lived. And it was, we all got invited up there to sort of take advantage of two of the course architects that were coming in, that were going to look at redesigning about four holes. And they said, you know, they invited people and they said, you know, we want people to go to the Q&A session. And so I got on that invite, and somebody reached out to me who happened to be following me on Twitter and said, "Hey, I know you're a big Cleve Hill fan. You know, you post about it all the time. Are you going to be there?" And I said, "Yeah, I am actually. Are you?" And he goes, "Yep." So I told him, I was like, "I'm going to have my Shishkin hat on. That way he knows who I am." And then got there and we started chatting. And it was great just chatting with him about all things golf, because he's got a big Twitter following, and just, you know, it was just kind of fun to share experiences. But I was able to meet a couple of guys there that were the actual course architects, and then have dinner. And after that sort of the walkthrough of all the different courses, that we actually, everybody kind of left except for me and the two course architects, and a guy from Sounder Golf. And so the guy from Sounder Golf, and that's like a golf clothing line that's there out there, and which is really great stuff. And I started chit-chatting with him. And at dinner, we actually all had dinner together that night, and we all started chatting, and I described my story to him. And he goes, what do you think about your story for, you know, like, you know, writing it for our website? And I said, yeah, I can try to do that, right? And so I pulled something together, and he's like, yeah, this is great. This is kind of what we're looking for. It hits our vibe. And yeah, he put it out there. And I was like, this is pretty cool. And I said, he brought up a couple of other ideas and other stories, like one even being, you know, how Americans feel about the weather in terms of, you know, because it is always an interesting topic. And then, you know, there's a couple other, I wrote a second one about technology. And so, you know, I'm kind of the anti-tech. When it comes to golf, like, you know, other than your rangefinder, you know what, you spend too much time thinking about stats and things like that, and distances and greens and regulation. And I know how you and Greg love, you know, to kind of rattle off those sort of things. And I'll be honest with you, I have a hard time even keeping my score, let alone like keeping stats. And I find myself just so involved with just playing and just walking the course that I don't really think about those things. So I wrote an article about, like, you know, the things you miss when you're just so fixated on all those stat things, right? And so, you know, if I told you all the courses that are my favorite courses, the one thing I can't tell you about any of those courses is what I shot. I can't remember. I have no idea. And well, I can tell you it's probably about 84, 85, because that's about when I shot every single time. But it's one of those where it doesn't mean quite as much, but that was kind of the vibe of the writing, right? And so, and now I'm trying to reach out to some other people too about maybe writing for other folks in the future. And then, you know, I do put out a lot of course reviews as well. And so, but yeah, it's just fun to put stuff out there and see what kind of reactions I get. And, you know,
well, it's cool. We're going to get into
that's where it's at.
We're going to get into one in a minute, but don't cut Greg and I short. A lot of that stuff we talk about is after the round. I mean, we're not worried about where we are statistically in the round. We're, you know, when we're competing, obviously our score is a focus. But other than that, I mean, we're just more worrying about, you know, not losing our $5 golf ball and enjoying the ride. So now, normally when we have any guest on our show, we go through some what we call the back nine. But with not having Greg here, I don't think that's going to be really fair. So what I want to jump into something that we talked about before the show. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to kind of read one of your first editorials or your first articles that you were able to write right here on the air. And again, I'm not going to ever say that I've invented the wheel. You know, obviously we are stealing this idea from one of these podcasts that we follow and we both actually truly enjoy to listen to. And if they're out there, you know, no laying up, if they're out there, take a listen to us. And as we're shouting out to you, maybe you can help us out too as we're growing and trying to get our numbers to skyrocket as well. But I want to give you an article over the next few minutes, probably 10, 15 minutes or so, however long, probably about 10 minutes, however long it's going to take you to go ahead and read it. I want you to go ahead and read that editorial, or I'm assuming I'm calling it the right thing, that editorial for us right here online.
Yeah, I don't know what I'd call it either, actually. It's just an article. So it's called A Golfer's Passport. There are nearly 40,000 golf courses on planet Earth, and nearly half of them are found in the United States. But not all golf courses are created equal, as bullpens and bunkers found when work brought him across the pond to England. I grew up playing golf in America. The game I knew was placed on well-manicured courses, neatly designed with everything in its place. I liked golf, but I liked a lot of other things too. And then I moved to the UK. Over here, golf felt different, raw, organic, and a bit unpredictable, like a good movie with a few unexpected twists. It wasn't about the pristine conditions or the picture-perfect fairways. It was about land that seemed to breathe with history, courses that had more character than commodity, and culture that embraced the game's quirks rather than trying to smooth them out. Take the Cotswolds, for instance. You've got Cleve Hill, Painswick, and Minchinhampton Old Course, rural rugged gems that seem carved out of the landscape rather than imposed on it. Playing there is like stepping into a timeless painting where every slope and contour whispers of centuries past. It's golf at its purest, unrefined, untouched, and utterly absorbing. Sure, there's a path, but it's more of a suggestion than a direction. Then there's rye, a personal favorite, where tradition isn't just preserved. It's practically bottled and served up at the clubhouse bar. Stepping onto the course is like stepping into a book. You can almost picture Bernard Darwin himself ambling along, notebook in hand, contemplating the perfect putt. Rye keeps the spirit of the game alive, where you're not just playing golf, you're playing a part of its long storied history. In Royal West Norfolk, now that's a course that doesn't just try to toy with your game, it toys with your senses. You start by walking across the beach to the first green, dodging the tide and feeling the sea breeze in your face. It's a journey just to get to the rounds, and that's before you've even hit a shot. The course itself is a beautiful, stubborn beast, one that dares you to respect the land and elements. It's part golf, part pilgrimage, and all unforgettable. Speaking of pilgrimages, the Isle of Arran holds a special place in my heart. I made the trek to play what I believe are the greatest 12 holes of golf on the planet at Shishkin. No fancy clubhouse, no pretensions, just pure, unfiltered golf with views that will make you forget how many shots you're over par. It's the kind of place where every hole is its own adventure, complete with blind shots, dramatic drops, and greens tucked into secret coves. And after that, there's Corrie, a picturesque little course just down the road, which feels like you've stumbled upon a hidden treasure. Playing there is like being in a wonderful secret that the world hasn't quite discovered yet. When I first moved to England, I chased the best of the best, hunting down all 14 courses that have hosted the Open Championship. Playing at St. Andrews, Royal Portrush, Royal St. George's, each was jaw-dropping in its own right, ticking off bucket list dreams. There's something undeniably thrilling about standing on the same tees where the game's legends had battled for the claret jug. But here's the twist. As much as I cherish those rounds, it was the other courses nearby that left me with those most indelible memories. Take St. Andrews, for instance. Sure, the old course is a spiritual home, but wander just a little, and you'll find gems like Ely or Anstruther, where the vibe is just as authentic, but with a touch less pressure to post a score that matches your fantasy. Over in East Lothian, Muirfield and North Berwick are as iconic as they come, with the lesser known gems like Dunbar or Kilspindie offered rounds filled with whimsy and charm. I found the same joy across the Surrey Sand Belt, where the glories of Sunningdale and Walton Heath are well documented, but places like Berkshire and Swinley Forest, a slice of golfing heaven that feels like a private invitation to a very secret club, are where the true magic happened. Just promise you won't overlook Hankley Common or the Addington, where you question how do they possibly stay under the radar of most visitors from the United States. And don't even get me started on Troon. Sure, the open venue was a beast, but I found just as much joy hacking my way through the likes of Western Gales or Prestwick St. Nicholas. And of course, no round is complete without that post-golf pint, a ritual sadly neglected by the busy schedules of my golfing partners back at home. There was nothing quite like sinking a well-earned pint of Tennent's or a smooth Guinness at a local pub, still wearing a touch of mud from the course. Or maybe it's the dram of whiskey, warming your soul after a day braving the wind on a windswept links. Those moments, glass in hand, reliving the highs and lows of the day, are as much part of the game as the swings themselves. It's a chance to soak it all in, to savor the place, the people, and the stories that linger long after the last putt is dropped. It's funny, isn't it? You spend years chasing the marquee names, expecting to be transformed by the sheer weight of history. And don't get me wrong, playing on the open road, of course, in tournament conditions is like starring in your own golf epic. But the real stories, the ones you find yourself sharing over a pint long after the round, are those unexpected, delightful encounters on the courses next door. The places where you don't have to jostle for a photo on the Swillacombe Bridge or fight a crowd to see the line on the green. It's there in the shadows of the famous courses that golf feels truest to itself. Unpretentious, welcoming, and endlessly fascinating. There's a reason why I find myself more captivated by golf's history and architecture than the modern obsession with stats and yardage. When I walk a course designed by the likes of Dr. McKenzie, Colt, or Braid, I'm not just playing, I'm stepping into a story. These aren't just holes. They're canvases painted with intention, strategy, and a little bit of mischief. And while I love a well-crafted design, it's the untamed, whimsical courses that steal my heart. Ones that invite you to take off the GPS and play by feel, where the bunkers are as much of a surprise to the architect as they are to the player. Sometimes I wonder if what we're all chasing in golf is a bit of nostalgia. Maybe it's a desire to connect to something timeless, a simpler joy that's harder to find in modern life. I believe golf at its best allows us to coexist with nature, respecting its rhythms while enjoying the challenges it presents. And it's clear that the game isn't just about competition. It's about creating memories with kindred spirits. When you find that perfect course with its blend of randomness and beauty, it leaves you wanting more, not in a gluttonous way, but in a way a traveler yearns for more stories, more encounters, and more adventures. Golf for me is about the purest. It's about the pursuit. It's the allure of the journey, the place it takes you, and the memories it leaves behind. It's the road less traveled, the book half read, the cocktail you want to savor. That's the game I love, and that's the game I hope to share with others.
Man, I can't wait for this snow to get off the ground.
Yeah.
I tell you what, if that doesn't get you pumped up, maybe to play some golf and build those experiences. But Brian, I want to appreciate you coming on. Can you tell us a little bit more about where we can find you and where, what's your handles and everything?
Yeah. So I predominantly use Twitter. I feel like it's the, so I think Instagram is where you kind of showcase golf and you, and talk, but Twitter's really where you talk about golf. It seems to be like, that's kind of the, where I hang out the most. So on Twitter, it's at bullpen24. I'm on Instagram as well, but admittedly, I just don't put very much out there. And then, the articles can be found at Sounder Golf. So, that's where you can find those. And, other than that, that's kind of where I'm at. The company I'm working with is Accentra. They're Xentra. And you can just search for that and it pops straight up. I've got a little link on there that we're hoping to populate pretty soon. And with a lot of, different kind of course reviews, as well as sort of, designs that cost, golf trips that we started to design as well. So, and then, I mean, obviously I think, this year I'm really, really excited because, you know, as much as I can contribute to Fairway Fit, I mean, hopefully you can find me there too. And that'll be another way that we can start, kind of merging our two little passions together and creating something special.
Yeah. So really want to appreciate you coming on. We're going to drop all that info in the notes for the show. So make sure to check us out. Make sure to like us, follow us. Make sure to follow Greg and I and all of our social media accounts. We have some really big things coming up in season two, which will start up here in probably about, you know, 6 or 7 weeks when we get ourselves going, get this snow out of here, and get our games going in the right direction. And definitely look forward to having you on more, Brian on more throughout the season. Tell everyone right now, stay warm. And try to hit those simulators if you can. Talk to you soon.